You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr. And with me, as always, the colorful, exuberant Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, you know, just living and dying by every pitch on the Royals game.
Of course.
Like every September, except not.
See, I decided I had to, just like the Royals need to, I had to ramp up my game for September, so I gave you two adjectives this time.
Two new ones. I haven't had colorful before.
No, have not had colorful.
Probably and not exuberant either.
That was in reference to personality and not necessarily fashion choice, for those curious. Although Michael Engel is a pillar of fashion.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I'm wearing a blue t-shirt.
There it is. Problem. Maybe KU, maybe even, maybe Royals, who knows? Yep. So there's a lot of options there.
It's plain. It's
just a plain blue, just a jockey, huh?
Understated.
Understated. That's what we like to term it. It'll be a new trend. Next thing you know, all the kids will be wearing plain blue shirts.
I'm pretty sure that'll happen.
Yes. So we've got some things to cover. Mainly the Royals' somewhat precarious situation since we last talked. It's been in the biggest series in my generation's lifetime. For those curious, I'm 29 years old. So I was literally born the year the Royals won the World Series. Consequently, last time they made the playoffs. And they just laid a gigantic egg. And they ended up winning one game. But Friday night, the whole city is just amped. Everyone's talking about it. They come in a half game back. And if they win, if they were to sweep, then they'd be three games up. Right? Was that what it was? No,
No, they'd have been half a game up going into this series.
Really? I thought they were only a half game down when they before the series started. Was it a game and a half?
Yeah.
Okay. That's where I was messed up. Anyway, but they would have been in first place and going into the Cleveland series. But that is not what happened. I went out there Friday night with my parents. We were jacked. My parents were at Game 7 in 1985, and they said that this was, not only did they recognize it was the biggest, but it just felt, you know, sometimes things, especially with sports, they just have a feeling of one thing or another. And my parents said it felt like the biggest game since that World Series. And go out there, everyone's pumped, stadium's rocking. It's, I don't know if it was a sellout crowd, but it was close, 35,000 probably.
And yeah, it was 30. I'm actually looking right at it was 37,945 that first game.
There it is. Yeah, I knew it was big. And then there's the they were giving out the thunder sticks. Everybody was all pumped, and then just man, it was like 2012 season opener all over again. Just crapped all over themselves. It was, quite frankly, it was pretty embarrassing. But it started with Jason Vargas giving up three runs in the first inning, and then he gave up another run in the next inning, and then I think it was either three more. I can't remember. But by the third inning or so, it was 7-0, and it was just downhill from there. By the fifth inning, there was only one or two starters still in the game, and I mean, it was just plain ugly. Like people wonder why we're conditioned to be so fearful of big things happening and good things happening for the Royals, and that's why. Because every time the city gets a good feeling, it just, not only is it dashed, but it's crushed, like just destroyed. Like, not only, hey, don't feel good anymore, but hey, don't ever feel good. Like, that's, you know, one of those things. So
you should feel bad you ever felt good.
Exactly. I want you to remember how good you felt and how bad you feel now and never feel good again. But yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then Saturday comes along. Okay, well, you know, and our friend David Leskey brought up the point that last year in a three-game series in September, the Royals lost 16-2 to the Tigers and then came back and won the next two games, right? So that's a positive thought. Like, hey, you know, obviously last year's team has nothing to do with this year's, but point being, sometimes you can lose the first game pretty bad and still come back and salvage them, win the series. So that was kind of the hope. That's one of those games like, hey, you beat us today, tip your cap, move on to the next day. And come out Saturday, and they got a much better showing from the team. And I was kind of out running around on Saturday, so I was not able to watch the game, but I kind of caught up through just what I read and people said. And one of the biggest base running blunders I've probably ever heard, maybe not necessarily the act itself, but given the situation and the importance of each game this series, just such a huge gaffe where Salvador Perez is on third base. Did you actually watch the game, Mike?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. Why don't you tell this one? Because I didn't see it. I'm just going off what people told me. So why don't you go ahead and take this?
So, okay. Sal Perez hits a little flare, gets on first base with a single. Eric Hosmer doubles behind him. So second and third, there's one out. Omar Infante hits a line drive pretty much right at Ian Kinsler, who for some reason throws to second. And, you know, there wasn't really a play that was going to be there. The shortstop was late breaking to it. So the ball, you know, goes into shallow left field. Looks like it's a big break for the Royals because they come around and Sal Perez scores. Eric Hosmer ends up on third. But like you said, huge base running error. And Perez retreated back to third base. You remember, it's a line drive, so he's got to tag up. He went back towards the base. He was about a step, maybe a step and a half away from it, and then broke for home and never tagged up. And it became this chaos almost after that because Brad Ausmus came out and was talking to the umpire saying that, well, okay, Perez never touched third. They end up, the umpires confer with New York to see if it's a reviewable play. It's not a reviewable play. During that time, Detroit had also appealed. So they, you know, stepped off, throw to third. The umpires had not made a ruling. And so they went with their original ruling of safe. And so they ruled it as a safe play. But then after, you know, talking to New York, they convened together and decided that he had never tagged up. And at that point, they reversed their call. And I think there's a lot of confusion among a lot of fans about, you know, was this a reversal of replay? Because it's not supposed to be reviewable. But it looked to me more like the umpires had talked amongst themselves and as a result came to the conclusion that no, he had not, and they ended up getting the call correct. The way they got it was disjointed and confusing, and the broadcast was not helpful at all because this was a national broadcast, and they didn't indicate in any way that there was an appeal to third, which would have been required before anything else. And so it was just a mess, but the end result was the correct ruling that, okay, you know, Perez did not tag up, should have been out, ended the inning instead. And then the next inning, they get a couple runners on. Perez doesn't block a pitch. Base hit scores two, becomes 3-2. And then as the game continued, you know, the Royals, they did fight back. They ended up with two runners on, and for some reason, Raul Ibanez ended up batting instead of Billy Butler, who was also on the bench. The Royals just needed a base hit. They just needed a single, and it probably would have won the game. And for some reason, they went with Ibanez. You know, you grounded out first. And it was a definite winnable game. Royals didn't pull it out. It could be a huge game in the end of things. Almost certainly after that series, the Royals win one. They lose two. Almost certainly cost them the division. But, you know, now their playoff hopes, they're after the suspended game was finally resolved and the Royals lost that, as I think most really suspected, though they did give them a run.
That was, I'm going to be honest, I was listening to that on my way home because it started at 5 before tonight's game, and we're recording this on Monday, September 22nd, for those listening later. But I was listening. That was probably one of the more intense moments this season, just listening to that because it was so nerve-wracking. And then they actually get a run, and it's like, oh, my God, they got a shot at this thing. They got a man on second base with the with two outs, and they could tie it up, and nope, didn't happen.
Nope. So, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to get
I never expected them to make the win or to get the win off of that. So not a huge deal. I won't, like, decry any sort of – you know, poor play or anything, but they gave it, they did better than I thought they would. I thought it'd just be a 1-2-3 piece, we're out of here, let's start the next game type of scenario. But so anyway, and then the next day, which yesterday, as of the day we're recording this, Sunday, the Royals do pull one out and they get a solid game. They win 5-2, and you know, it was it was absolutely what they needed to salvage it. And like you said, it probably, losing that series 2-1 most likely cost them a division. And the thing that might be the worst of it is not necessarily, you know, the percentages being against them for winning the division now, but just like it kind of, I mean, the Royals do control their own destiny, but it almost feels like they don't now because, you know, that a lot of where their playoff fate ends up depends on what Oakland and Seattle do. And, you know, and if they're ahead of Seattle now, so as long as they take care of business, then they should still, you know, make the playoffs. But all the same, you wouldn't want to be in a situation where you got to hope on somebody else. And you know, don't look now, but as the Royals begin this series with Cleveland, Cleveland's only 3 games back of the Royals. So a sweep by Cleveland puts both teams tied, and then that would assume, I mean, Mariners probably don't lose all 3 of theirs or whatever, you know, whatever series they're in right now. So they would probably leap into the second wild card spot, so depending on what Oakland does, and then it could get really jumbled for that last series of the season. So hopefully the Royals take care of business. As we record this right now, they're up 1-0. Danny Duffy's pitching. He's not doing terribly, but he's definitely trying to find his groove back, and he's having some trouble. But for the most part, he's held it together so far. But anyway, I mean, what are your thoughts, Mike? Where's this team at right now? Where are they going? I mean, after this past weekend and everything that happened, how do you feel about everything?
Well, I mean, another part of it is, you know, they also had that second game of the White Sox series where they had the lead. They went to Herrera, they went to Davis, and they gave up their first run since June. That was a little hard one to handle too, because I mean, at this point, every chance you have for a win, you got to get it. You know, there's so little room for error. You know, a two game losing streak can do it, can end it for you, because there's so many teams that are involved that can jump up behind you. And so, you know, at this point, there's 7 games left, and one of those is about halfway through. I mean, it's do or die every time. Now, at the same time, they are in a position where they are right there. You know, they already have the second wild card spot that they're occupying right now. So teams still have to overcome them at the same time. But that also assumes that the Royals are going to keep winning. I saw something earlier today that if they get 4 more wins, and they've got, you know, at that point they had 8 games because they were still kind of counting the suspended game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 4 more wins, and it was something like, it was over 80% shot of being in the playoffs. You know, so that's basically, they run simulations and, okay, these guys are generally going to make the playoffs with 4 wins based on other schedules. And so in that sense, I feel pretty good about it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, we've seen this team disappear at times. Their defense is kind of solidified again, kind of like, you know, we talked about it last time. They had a lot of problems in the first half of September. It's gotten a little better. And so now it's kind of waiting for the bats to get back, and that kind of looks like that's coming around. So I feel okay as I look now. Seattle is losing to Toronto. That's a definite positive. And basically it's just counting it down. It's, you know, looking at what the magic number is, and every time Seattle loses, that's good. And every time the Royals win, that's good. And if you can get both of those to be on the same day, that's even better. So it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to do in this situation. I haven't been in this spot really. Last year, it was all chasing. It wasn't trying to hold on. It was, you know, it was pretty simple. We need them to lose, and Royals need to win, and it, you know, that's it. I guess it's the same idea now, but the Royals really need to win, and it's interesting to see how they handle that pressure, where they have to be the team that holds on to it, and especially when they're playing Cleveland, who they haven't played that great against this year. You know, they do have the lead now, but you know, it's only one run, and you know, that could
we know how tenuous that can be for the Royals.
Yeah, and for any team really, but you know, one run, I mean, that might be all they get. So I'm nervous, but I'm, you know, kind of excited to see what happens. I mean, I bought playoff tickets, so that's cool. That's a first.
That's pretty cool. If nothing else, you'll have them, even if you don't ever get to use them.
Yeah. Well, as so I speak, I'm recording this in my little dining room kind of space, and I have a framed sheet from last year's playoff tickets that, you know, they sent them out to season ticket holders, and so I found some on eBay for like $6-7 or something, and decided, ah, heck with it, I'll frame it. So,
well, now you just switch it out. That's all you
yeah,
need.
Yeah, except these, I printed them off. They were print-at-home tickets. So can't really do the same thing, but still, I mean, one way or the other, I'm going to keep a hold of them.
Yeah. And I'm kind of with you, just not really knowing what to do. It's just kind of a, I mean, at this point, there are things we can criticize about the Royals and how they've performed down the stretch, and things that we can, you know, talk about with the organization, but right now I don't even feel like getting into that, because there's only a week left, so we'll know the results in a week by the time we record this next show, and we'll be able to say, okay, we've got some problems, what needs to be fixed, or we still got some problems, but hey, we're in the playoffs, so let's worry about it later. Right. You know, it'll be kind of weird, but one thing we could look at, you want to talk about the Dayton Moore thing now, or do you want to do that later?
Oh, let's do that on the next spot.
Okay, we'll do that on the next spot.
Yeah, we can do that.
But in terms of, we'll kind of look forward with the Royals. We got the Cleveland, and then comparing the Royals and the Tigers. I don't even know if we should compare the Tigers, because they pretty much locked up the division at this point, if you ask me. But
they are losing tonight, last I looked, too. But, you know, that's the kind of team that they're, you know, Cabrera gets a hit, Martinez gets a hit, JD Martinez is going to get a 3-run home, and they're going to win the game.
Yeah.
Joe Nathan's going to put 3 guys on base and strike out the side from there, and they're going to win the game. Because they just tap, they do that. They do that all the time. I don't know how many times that formula has worked for the Tigers this year, but I feel like it's like 25 games they've had where some guy hits 3-run homer, take the lead, Joe Nathan puts a bunch of guys on, you feel like they're going to blow it, and he doesn't. And it's really aggravating to watch when you want them to lose, because they don't do it. And especially JD Martinez, who is an alien, I'm sure, or he sold his soul to have one good year. And he's having it.
The Brady Anderson method.
You said it, not me.
Well, I guess I wasn't necessarily alluding to any sort of steroid use.
Yeah, he's not having outrageous numbers. It just seems like every time there's a big hit to be had, he's done it. And especially against the Royals.
But
just like he's hitting 8 million against the Royals.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
I hate him.
And Torrey Hunter continues to kill
and
the Royals.
And Torrey Hunter, God.
I hate Torrey Hunter so much.
In every way. He terrorized the Royals when he was with the Twins. Then they tried to sign him. He didn't sign with them. Signed with the Angels. The Royals instead signed Jose Guillen. And now he's with the Tigers, and it seems like
he finds the fountain of youth every time he plays the Royals.
Yeah. Yeah. What a jerk.
What a jerk. But the Royals are going to end the season after this Cleveland series. If they can take care of business, they'll be in pretty good shape. But they're going to end the season against the White Sox. And apparently, if I heard correctly, they're probably going to catch Chris Sale one more time, which, despite the fact that they roughed him up pretty hard last time they faced him, last Wednesday, that's still never a good thing. So,
right.
I mean, Royals are 84-71 now after the completion of the suspended game. So if they win five of their final seven games, and that puts them at 89.
That feels good.
73. I mean, that's between winning the division, first wild card, and second wild card. I think 89 is good for one of those spots.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple. Who knows? But the A's are not in a good way right now. Although I think they won last night. They in extra innings.
Yeah, they had a walk-off.
They won 8-6 or something in the 10th.
Yep.
But they are just they're hurting, and they. Their manager, their players, and interviews, and everything else they're talking really dejectedly, and it's, you know, so if there's one thing that's boding well for the Royals now, it's the fact that the A's are not looking very good. However, I believe they finished the season against. Did they finish season against the Angels or the Mariners? No, they finished against the Rangers and the Mariners against the Angels. However, the Angels have basically already clinched the one seed in the playoffs. They're probably close.
They're three games. Two and a half games above Baltimore.
Wouldn't quite lock
there's
it up.
There's still something to play for there.
Still something to play for. But by the time they play the Mariners the last three games of the season, maybe there won't be. You know, maybe they'll be three and a half games up with three to play.
They don't have to worry about it.
They don't have to care. Hopefully that's not what happens. Hopefully they're a game up. With three games to play or a game and a half or whatever, and then, you know, they have to
play. They actually play Mike Trout instead of...
Yes, instead of whoever
they were
instead of whatever unlucky Joker is trying to back him up.
Well, and they had that game where they put out, it was basically all the September call-ups, and that team still played Seattle 0-0 into the ninth inning, and then they gave up a homer. So,
Angels team, man, they were... Last couple of years, they've been kind of underperforming based on their roster, and then this year, they've just exploded. I mean, I think they've had some injuries over the last couple of years, but didn't Jared Weaver, did he have Tommy John a couple of years ago, or he had a shoulder thing or something?
I don't remember.
I thought he had an injury a couple of years ago, but...
he may have.
Let's check this out.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they have underperformed. I mean, they put all that money into Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton. It looked like Pujols was going to be a big bust. And this year he's not, you know, Albert Pujols, you know, god of hitting like he was in St. Louis. But he's been pretty good. And I think Hamilton, has he been hurt? This shows how much I've
Hamilton's
paid attention.
Been hurt. Yeah, that's it. So it wasn't Tommy John or anything like that. But it looks like last year Weaver had something. He only had 24 starts, so he missed a good, you know, he missed about 10 starts. So that's, you know, how many games is that? 50 games?
Yeah, and they've also had, Garrett Richards has been hurt, too.
You know,
he had, you know, he's out for the year, and he's been out for a while, and that was about when they started to go on their run, was when he got hurt.
They were taking
the A's.
They were, what, like 10 games behind the A's at one point?
Yeah, the A's were the best team in baseball, basically. And then the A's stopped hitting. They were, you know, they won like 30% of their games over a month and a half. Just a stunning collapse almost. I think they might be able to hold on, but the Royals are only a game behind the A's. And so Seattle's only, you know, two games behind them. So
yeah,
it's not too, you know, outrageous to think that Seattle could overtake them too.
And we on this show are all big fans of Billy Bean and what he's been able to do with the roster, but I think they haven't collapsed quote unquote yet,
right?
They're still technically in the playoffs, but regardless, you know, I think you got to hang this on him because he went out and he made some bold moves. And I know myself on this show applauded him for it. And, you know, I typically give him the benefit of the doubt, but this, and I thought it was, the whole thing was overblown with Yoenis Cespedes and,
yeah,
you know, how big of an impact he was going to make. And there were people in the A's organization that were worried. And I was like, ah, it's just a bunch of whatever. It's overblown. It's not going to be that big of a deal. They had the biggest run differential in the league by like 30 runs. And well, it's definitely made a difference, whether it's coincidental or not. I mean, there've been some additional factors, since post All-Star break, players like John Jasso, who haven't been playing as well. And
Derek Norris hasn't been good.
Yeah.
Coco Crisp hasn't been good. And he's kind of there, you know, he's kind of that spark plug. You know, he's the prototypical leadoff hitter type of guy who, when he's going good, everybody's going good. I think there's some stat for Nori Aoki where when he scores, the Royals are, you know, I don't even know, they're 50-4 or something. Yeah, I don't know what the actual stat is, and it's probably not that extreme, but it's very, you know, he's usually been the leadoff hitter, and when he gets on, usually things are going to, you know, go well. And, you know, especially the last, you know, week and a half, for the last week, he's been the guy. He's been red hot. And so when a guy like that doesn't hit, you know, you have problems. You look at what Aoki did in May, where he wasn't really that good. So that kind of underscores, you know, when you're starting the game off with a guy who's probably not going to get on base, well, you're starting off with one out almost automatically a lot of times, and that can be a problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, there have been some additional factors beyond just Cespedes, but, you know, all the same, maybe that was kind of the catalyst, that the, you know, reverse catalyst almost, that kind of started all these bad things in motion. Maybe you don't want to speculate too much, of course, because it's kind of a weird thing trying to predict or quantify the effect a move like that has on the locker room landscape. But I mean, there's definitely something happened. Yeah. And there was a lot of shuffling that they had when they had things going really well, and they kind of shuffled, and, you know, they've shuffled and then they've scuffled. So that was a free joke, by the way. You guys, you're welcome.
The premium jokes will come later.
Those will come later, and you'll have to pay for those. But I don't know. Some of it's got to be on him, because if I'm gonna pin some of this stuff on Dayton Moore, then you got to pin some of it on Billy Beane as well. So, but it's. At the same time, it's incredibly awesome that the Royals could even have the A's in their sights at this point, considering, I mean, they were probably 20 games behind the A's at one point this season. So that's pretty spectacular, if you ask me.
Yeah, and if they do happen to catch the A's, if they tie as the wild cards, the game would be hosted in Kansas City because the Royals won the series. So
look at that.
I mean, that would be nuts. To end up having, you know, the A's look like this juggernaut through most of the season, and then end up, you know, being the road team on a playoff game in Kansas City. That'd be something that in July would never thought would have happened. But hey, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'm fine with it.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, with that, I think we'll take the first break, and then we come back. We'll talk. Talk a little Dayton Moore, and maybe beyond this year, what possible future lies for this organization. So stick with us, and we'll be back after the break.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn.
the highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us here with after the break. And as we told you before, we got a little something about Dayton Moore. Well, Dayton Moore, as we all know, is a big favorite of this show as a GM. So if you couldn't detect the sarcasm, then I'll plainly say that we were being very sarcastic. But today, the Atlanta Braves, today being September 22nd, again, when we're recording, the Atlanta Braves fired Frank Wren, is that his name? Was it Frank?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The general manager for the Atlanta Braves. And as we all know, as has been brought up multiple times by Dayton Moore and others within the organization, Dayton Moore is from Atlanta, the organization. Not necessarily the town, of course. Did you know that? I don't know if you knew that, Mike.
Figure. Okay.
Weird, right?
Gosh darn.
who knew? Who knew? So he's got ties. And
I think they'd mention that sometime.
Yes, and he basically learned the tools of the trade baseball front office acumen from former Royals general manager John Schuerholz, who was the general manager in Atlanta for a long time. That big run they had of 14 straight division titles. And Schuerholz is currently still the president of the Atlanta Braves. So no doubt whoever takes over as general manager, Schuerholz is going to have a big say. And Dayton Moore was one of his pupils. Now, from what we heard, from some Braves people, Dayton Moore is not the number one target. I cannot remember the name of the guy. Capoletta, is that right? I'm unfamiliar. I'm unfamiliar with the person, but he's in the Braves front office already, and so he has some experience there with the current team, some familiarity, and supposedly is a real hotshot type candidate. So he is the front runner as of now, from what we've heard. However, you know, Dayton Moore's name has been tossed around. He's already been asked about it in the media and refused to respond. The only thing he said was that it's part of the process. So if anything, that's, which is actually quite funny.
Of course
for
it
different
is.
Reasons, but, I mean, it's the least, you know, it wasn't a flat out no, but sometimes the flat out no is almost means more, because then that means they're actually talking and they just don't want to discuss anything publicly right now.
Yeah.
But, after KU won the national championship and Oklahoma State needed a new coach and they came calling on Bill Self, he was open about it and said, yeah, I'm going to talk to them because they're my alma mater, but I don't plan on leaving. They want to talk to me and, you know, ask for advice, whatever. Mm-hmm. So or maybe it's a situation like that where Dayton Moore is just saying, hey, it's part of the process. They're going to talk to me. Or maybe they're going to get my thoughts on something because they, whatever. You know, and this kind of stuff happens all the time where you would talk to rival executives and get their opinions because, you know, everybody knows everybody and people have different opinions on different people and things like that. And if you trust one person for one reason or another, even if they're in a different organization, maybe you want to get their thoughts. So maybe that's the case that's going on. But his name is going to be thrown about regardless, just because of his connections to Schuerholz, the Braves, everything. So, I mean, we could be in a Dayton Moore-less future in the Royals if things were to kind of swing that way. And the Braves wanted to take back their prodigal son, if you will. I mean, what are your thoughts on these developments here, Mike?
It's kind of crazy. I mean, there's no surprise that Dayton Moore's name would come up in this, especially considering that, you know, he's been rather tenuous as the Royals GM. You know, there's nobody's really been super pleased with him for the most part. And so, I you know, it's tough to pick it out. I mean, I think it's probably early in the process to really say anything, but it is a kind of interesting thing to see what, you know, this next week does for that, because if the Royals make the playoffs, you know, Dayton can bank that into, you know, a job that's probably going to be better in a better market with, you know, more, I guess, clout, more TV, more, you know, more, probably more control. You know, he can say, hey, I took this team to the playoffs. I my system worked. And you also know what I'm about. But it could also be something where, you know, if the Royals aren't, you know, thrilled with some of the developments and maybe the time frame, I guess this is all on David Glass, who has, you know, never really said anything negative about Dayton Moore. So it's tough to read that. But, you know, it's a chance if they don't make the playoffs for him to kind of save face and he can leave and go to the Braves job without really being fired. And nobody has to fire him, you know. So it's really interesting to see how this is going to play out. You know, even if he's not the favorite, he's got to be on the board,
right?
So I want to see how that turns out. Ken Rosenthal reported earlier that David Glass said he wouldn't get in the way if Dayton Moore wanted to go and check into this opening. But you also have to remember Dayton's got a couple of years left, so. You know, that does make it difficult for the Royals to give him up without trying to get some kind of compensation, which I don't know how often that worked out to where you're basically like trading your general manager. It's a non-zero chance he could go. And the thing about it is, like, you know, you brought up Bill Self, but the other guy that we think about is Roy Williams, who yep. in 2003 was just lost to Syracuse, and the North Carolina job had opened up and he took it because, you know, to some extent the call home is pretty strong. And I would imagine that, you know, even though Dayton Moore, you know, has profusely said that he's been a Royals fan all his life and everything, he's also an Atlanta guy and he's the Braves way. You look at the running joke of how many former Braves he would go and acquire in his first, you know, 4 or 5 years. As a Royals GM, you know, there's kind of a reason for that in a lot of ways, because he's probably comfortable with guys that he had scouted before because they were scouted in a system that he had come up in. And so I think if Schurrholz is still there, there's going to be at least some draw to that, to having him come back. And you know, I think he'll kick the tires on it. And I don't know if they would offer it to him if he's not necessarily their top one, especially if you have to consider that, you know, they would have to give up something. I don't know how that would work necessarily, but I think it would be interesting to see it, and I think a lot of people would be pretty happy about it. But then you also get into the thing of what would that mean for the Royals and the general manager after Dayton Moore if they let him go. And, you know, then you get into the same idea. You know, is it, you know, someone like J.J. Piccolo, you know, who's been in the organization? Or is it someone like someone outside, you know, some of the guys that have worked with the A's or, you know, the Rays or wherever. So it would be a domino effect in the end of it to see kind of what happens. And, you know, then a lot of people are kind of concerned about that because, hey, they know Dayton Moore. They've got this team in position to make a wild card run. And, you know, it's almost like devil, you know, or, you know, there's some people that are really big Dayton Moore fans. And, you know, he does deserve the praise of rebuilding the farm system and getting them in that spot. It looks like the James Shields trade in about a week could be a good move. You know, the final verdict kind of comes down on it. But at the same time, a lot of what Dayton Moore did is what any other new GM would do, is, you know, rebuild the farm system, put in your time towards development. And then when you look deeper at it and how the system has kind of developed players now that they've got, you know, 8 years of Dayton Moore drafts under it, you kind of have to look at that and say, hey, what has he really done? And, you know, you've got a lot of average-ish hitters that he's developed. You have a lot of really good bullpen arms, And after a number of years of struggles, you finally have a couple of starting pitchers and some more kind of down the pipe. And, you know, really, while, you know, the ideas he's put into place and, like, his focus has been good, and, you know, he's focused a lot on defense. But while all that's been there, at the same time, it's like, okay, what would another GM do? A lot of the same things and maybe a lot of the same things better. And so a change necessarily wouldn't be bad, even if you're talking about a change from a playoff team to, you know, changing out your general manager. So it could be really, really interesting this winter to see kind of where that happens. And then you also, you know, that doesn't even bring up, like, what happens to Ned Yost from that point. So it's just a lot of stuff that could happen. And it could just be nothing. It could just be smoke. But I think there's enough smoke that there might be some kind of fire there.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, if it was my world, then Dayton Moore would be the next GM of the Braves. But
yeah,
we all know that's just because I'm not the hugest fan of his. You know, his philosophy on how baseball works and mine are different. And he's obviously a general manager for a baseball team making lots of money. So, you know, most people would probably say his opinion is valuable, but whatever. You know, we happen to, I've never obviously talked to him in person, but I can just tell from how he operates that our philosophies differ. Anyway, so in case he ever wonders, but yeah, it's the biggest thing for me is, you know, like I think you, like you said, it was a non-zero chance. I would say maybe there's a 15-20% chance maybe that he leaves. So it's not very high, but it's there.
Yeah.
So if it were to happen, then like you said, the biggest question is where do the dominoes fall from there? And you mentioned JJ Piccolo, who's been on this show and is a great guy. You know, the question is, would the Royals want someone like him to step up? You know, is that the scenario they would want? Because we talked about it earlier on this show, earlier in the season, of the history of Royals general managers. And you know, you typically tend to think that, okay, if I have a problem with Dayton Moore's philosophies right now, it's like, well, that has nothing to do with the previous regime, Allard Baird, or the Schierholz. The Herc Robinson regime before Baird, and then Schierholz before him. You know, they all have nothing to do with each other. But when you dig a little deeper, and we talked about it on the show, there actually is a connection with all those people, because Herc Robinson studied under John Schierholz, who Baird studied under Robinson, and then Dayton Moore was an outside hire, but he studied under Schierholz for his time in Atlanta. So more or less, the Royals have basically been hanging around with the same philosophy on building an organization for going on 30 years. So it's really quite an interesting when you look at it that way. And then, you know, is JJ Piccolo, if he were to step in, does he just keep the status quo and try and ride this thing out the way it's going? Is that what the Royals need? Do they need something else? Do they need outside? And then that's where David Glass has to really step up and say, okay, here's where our organization is succeeding. Here's where we're failing. We need to bring somebody in here who can fix where we're failing and continue along with what we have, you know, and has to really critically look at who's out there and who they have. And is Piccolo that guy? Is somebody from the A's, somebody from the Rays, somebody from the Cardinals, somebody from the Yankees? You know, are there other people out there who can do what Dayton Moore has done, but then be better and take that next step? So again, this is all conjecture, and it's just, you know, kind of a big what-if scenario. But given the news that came out today and where the Royals are, and if this thing goes south here in the last week of the season, it could be a much more important topic. By the next time we do a show, it could be a much more important topic than it is right now. But it's definitely interesting to think about. And I, for one, am really curious to see how that will play out. Now, again, I tend to think Dayton Moore's not going anywhere. Because as Dayton Moore can probably see, I'm not sure when Wren took over as GM for the Braves. But he got fired because the expectations there are pretty high. When you win 14
yeah,
division championships in a row, or championships, division titles in a row, and, you know, go to a couple World Series, win one, have all these great players. Well, when you start to falter, the fans don't like it and get a little upset. And hell, the freaking Cardinals are winning their division right now, but earlier in the season they were 500 and they were ready to fire everybody, their fans were. So, and they've had one of the best runs over the last 10 years of in a while. So, I mean, fans are obviously fickle. And so I think if you're Dayton Moore, you look at that and you realize, okay, the pressure is going to be higher. You know, one of the reasons he's been allowed to kind of prosper here in Kansas City is because the expectations aren't very high. I mean, you got it all over the radio right now as the Royals are fighting for these playoffs this year of, you know, more or less the just shut up and take it, you know, enjoy it, because we've had such little competitive baseball in the past that we should be so thankful that we have this now, even if we don't make the playoffs. Just shut up and, you know, enjoy the ride. And you hear that over and over on the radio, and that doesn't happen everywhere. It only happens in areas where teams have had a sustained period of losing, and you're only afforded that kind of an outlook as a GM in a place like Kansas City. So, you know, but at the same time, Dayton Moore probably also knows that he himself and what he's done with this organization has ratcheted up his own expectations. And whether the Royals make the playoffs this year or not, the expectation next year is going to be something similar, if not better. So, and by all accounts, as we've also discussed on this show previously, the roster doesn't look quite as good next year as it does this year. Obviously, James Shields is gone. Even Billy Butler with his subpar year is gone. Nori Aoki is up in the air. Maybe the Royals try and sign him. Maybe they don't. You know, so there's definitely some question marks going into, and Shields obviously being the biggest one. And yeah, I also would not be surprised between Wade Davis and Greg Holland, one of those two is most likely got to go in this offseason, because you're going to be paying upwards of $10 million for the two of them. And you just, as good as they are, you can't do that. You just can't. Not if you're going to have to try and replace James Shields with, maybe they think Zimmer or Kyle Zimmer or Sean Manaea can come up and be that guy, or Brandon Finnegan, who's shown some promise. I don't know.
That's tough.
Yeah, exactly. So, point being, you know, maybe Dayton Moore looks at it and says, hey, I've got a good thing going here, and Kansas City is a special case, allowing me to basically fail and still keep my job. But at the same time, as well as I've done now, the expectation is going to be high next season, and we're probably not going to meet them. So if I can take this job, and anytime you take a new job, you probably have at least a 3-year grace period. You know, so he's like, well, I can guarantee myself a job for 3 more years or only one. And he's only under contract 2016 anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot of interesting dynamics in play, and maybe we've already talked about it more than is necessary, because maybe it'll just be shot down in a couple days. But it's an interesting thought, especially considering how we all know how much I enjoy Dayton Moore's tenure here in Kansas City.
Well, I hadn't thought about that. You know, getting the next job and having that kind of have that, you know, the grace period, like you said, because I mean that would be a part of it. And then when you add in that, okay, he would know that I can either take Atlanta and have some, you know, some kind of a safety net, some security for a few years, or stay in Kansas City and see basically the post Shields era, which is, who knows what that's going to look like. You know, that could be another thing that if it's offered, that might make him jump. I don't know. I just looked it up. Frank Wren was hired in October of 2007. Was promoted at that point as the GM. So he was there, you know, basically 2008, 2009, 2010, 2000, you know. So about
October
7
of 2007,
years.
So about a year roughly later than Dayton Moore.
Yeah.
And he's already fired. And what have the Braves done in his tenure? Do you have that pulled up?
I don't. I do not. They've made the playoffs.
We got time.
They did have.
Let's hear. You said 07, so basically 08 was the first season. So, yeah. And they were 72 and 90. which, by the way, it took, I guess Dayton Moore did have that 75-win season. That was 09 or something. But so, but then in his third season as GM, 2010, like you said, they made the playoffs, lost in the division series. And then 2 years later, 2012, they made the playoffs. They made the playoffs last year. And this year, they're, and that's, by the way, let's see, 5 years of 86 wins or more, three of which were 90-win seasons, 90-plus win seasons, including 96 last year. And then the 1 year in between was 89 wins. So, you know, that's what he put up at Atlanta and gets fired because they're 76 and 79 right now.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if the Royals were, I mean, this year, Dayton Moore would be in some trouble if they were 76 and 79. But if they make the playoffs this year and they're 76 and 79 next year,
yeah,
that's not a, it's not going to cost Dayton Moore his job. Maybe it should, but it's not going to. So it's, there's definitely some interesting factors at play here.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, it could be a wholesale reshuffling of the top of the front office. It could be, you know, you look at where the Royals are now as far as, you know, throughout all of their minor league teams as far as home runs and walks, and they're, you know, I think they're middle of the pack or maybe lower third in home runs. They're towards the bottom in walks. It's, you know, those are the kinds of things that when you look at Dayton Moore and some of their philosophy and the guys that they've signed at the big league level, you can kind of see that, okay, they're looking for that guy who can put the ball in play, who's not necessarily looking to work the walk or hit the ball over the fence. They're trying to find guys like Aoki and Infante, and you know that's who they signed. And so in a lot of ways, they might draft guys, you know, who maybe can make more contact but aren't hitting for as much power, and they're not making that a big emphasis. And so what happens is, you know, as you develop those guys, if you know they don't have power to start with, well, they're not going to develop it most of the time. And so you get to the situation now where, you know, if your guys who are supposed to have power like Hosmer and Moustakas get to the majors and don't make the adjustment to utilize that power, well, now you have an issue. And you know, you don't have a lot of guys who can hit for power on the Royals. And, you know, I think that would just continue unless you reshuffled and kind of, you know, if I can use a buzzword, you'd have to shift the paradigm throughout the organization. Yeah. And
this McCullough is a scenario wouldn't with, do it. No. And this is a scenario where it's actually appropriate to use that phrase, because there has been a longstanding idea of what Royals baseball is that's severely outdated. And, you know, you're absolutely right. It would need to be reshuffled. There, you know, there needs to be a change. And it's interesting because we talked about Billy Beane earlier, and, you know, he's had a long tenure there. But if you look at what he does now versus the Moneyball era, you know, he's made some tweaks to how he builds the team. And it's not, you know, he still likes to emphasize getting on base and walks, just because that's a tenet of baseball that most teams should recognize. But anyway, like, you know, he's definitely tweaked some things, and not like a full wholesale shift, but makes changes that you don't really see someone like Dayton Moore making. And we've given him credit this year for pulling back the reins on some things and making, you know, making some concessions with how he runs the organization, but they're just ever so slight, and, you know, not necessarily enough. I don't know that those changes are what's caused the Royals to be in the position that they're in, more so than mostly just a giant ball of luck.
It's and that's a big part of it. I mean, they hit on Jason Vargas, and Jeremy Guthrie has been serviceable, and you end up working it out to where you get this dynamic bullpen that can shut down the last three innings. And, you know, you do have to get some things to work out where, you know, Alex Gordon finally breaks it out, and your defense is outrageous and better than anybody. And then you're still kind of on the fringes here. So, you know, even though it's worked, you know, the kinds of things where he's gone for power guys, you know, guys like Josh Willingham, I mean, you know, he didn't sign those guys. He got him now to fill a hole that he hadn't developed through other players or through other signings. And so it's, you know, he's changed in some ways, but, you know, still a lot of the same ideas are going to be there. And that, you know, usually that's how it is with most people in whatever industry. But, you know, I think the Royals would continue that if it was someone like Piccolo, who, you know, fine talent evaluator in most cases, but at the same time, it's like, you know, is he detached enough to say, hey, this is what I would do differently from Dayton Moore? And that would be probably the first interview question, you know, after.
Yeah, what are you going to do different?
Yeah, after working under this guy for years, what would you do differently now? And, you know, maybe why hadn't you done anything to make it different
right.
at the time? And, you know, maybe there isn't anything. Maybe there's not. Maybe they're in lockstep. I don't know. But
yeah, that's – is he a company man, you know, where he just – so it's – that's tough. And, again, that's where, you know, I – and Dayton Moore, I mean, by all accounts, when he was hired was the guy. That was a great hire.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was basically in contention for every job out there. And – it was a great hire by the Royals at the time. You know, it hasn't necessarily worked out how I think they would have liked. And he had a maybe tougher hill to climb than he would have at other places. But all the same, you know, that's where it really, like I said, just it has to be on David Glass at that point. If push does come to shove and Dayton Moore's gone and they got to figure something else out, you know, Glass needs to look critically at himself and try and, you know, figure out, you know, be honest with himself and everyone, you know, is what's best for the organization, what's going to take them to the next step. So,
and a lot of that can change in a week.
Yes. It's like, so yeah.
And who knows?
And that'll kind of springboard. And the next time we talk, the season will either be over or it will be just beginning, if you will. So, you know, we'll have a lot more on that avenue to talk about. We'll probably have a lot more information on what Dayton Moore's future is with the Royals. And either way, his future will be a topic of discussion on this show.
Yeah, one way or the other.
Because as Dayton goes, you know, so goes the Royals, it seems. But so I think with that, we'll leave it. Like I said, next week, we'll know. We will know if the Royals are a playoff team or if they're watching in October like they have so many years to this point. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. It's going to be a fun last week, going to be a stressful, intense last week.
Yes.
but hopefully the Royals can pull this out, and we'll be talking about – we'll be putting a pin in the Dayton Moore discussion and talking about who they're playing in the opening wild card round, or, you know, best case scenario in the divisional round. So with that, I think we're going to leave you tonight this morning, whenever you're listening to this podcast. But for Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.